Well, hello, welcome to the next episode of Pegasus Radio. Today, I am delighted to be joined by Gary Fisher of Mode Consult. Welcome, Gary.
Hi, Paul.
How are you doing today?
Yeah, not bad. Lovely day. 22 degrees down here, so it's, lovely sunny day today.
Absolutely. So, Gary, just very quickly, do you want to just give us a very brief overview of, I guess, you and Mode, the operation, and then we can go into some of the more interesting stuff we want to talk about today?
Yeah, sure. So we set up 2 years ago, February 2019, prior to the pandemic. My background, I've been in the corporate world for most of my career, coming up to 30 years now, which is a bit scary. So I thought either now or never to go on my own, which I did. And we offer project management and quality surveying services, predominantly in the Southwest, but up in London, Birmingham, nationwide, really. So we'll go anywhere.
Yeah. Okay, good. And so, like you say, you've worked for a number of the biggest names in the consultancy market over the years, Gary. Yeah. What made you go on your own? What was the catalyst in the end? What was the decision to say, you know what, you know, after being a company man, so to speak, for so many years, what made you make that decision?
Well, I'm not getting any younger.
True.
I just thought, obviously we didn't have a pandemic in our business plan. So unfortunately, in the second year, the pandemic hit us. But I just thought, working for the large corporates was great. You know, I worked up in London on some brilliant projects and in Bristol and in the Southwest on some fantastic projects. And that's the benefit of working for the corporates. They do get the unique one-off projects
that
everyone wants to work on. And I saw other people, going on their own, doing it and doing it really successfully. And I found, clients even now come to me and ask, what's your setup? What can you offer that's different to some of the big corporates? And that's what we try and do. We try and offer something a little bit different. So we work with our clients rather than for them. We try and work in their offices if we can. So there's not a them and us scenario. We just become an extension of our clients, basically. A lot of my clients have stayed with me as well so that they can see the benefit of it. And this year now, we've got a real push on growth. So we want to grow this year and start to develop the Mode Core, as we call it. We've developed the Mode family, which is consultants, which we've surrounded ourselves with. And we try and sell each other into jobs and do them successfully and go from one job to the next. And it works really well.
And that's obviously multidiscipline in terms of what you talk about there, Gary. I guess architects, yeah. Engineers.
So it's a series of people that we know that can do, they've done similar things, they've gone on their own. So, working as an SME, you're working in a different pool to a larger corporate. So we found SMEs want to help SMEs. That's how we win a lot of our work. So a structural engineer or an architect, they might put us forward for a job. We might put them forward for a job. More private sector than public sector, obviously, because they've got protocols in place.
Sure.
But within the private sector, it works really well. We just, word of mouth, recommend each other, work together on job to job, and it works really, really well.
Yeah, good. And in terms of your actual headcount with your business, are you looking to grow as well this year?
Yeah, so this year is all about growth for us. So, coming out of the pandemic, the phone's not stopped ringing, as we've just talked about.
Yeah.
The struggle for us is going to find the right amount of people.
Struggle for everybody.
Those sort of levels really as well. I kind of asked myself the question, do I want to set up, I've kind of got a fresh page where do I want to set up like a corporate or standard consultancy would with a director level, associate level, senior QS assistant, trainee, or, similar sort of format for project managers as well. Do I want to set up that way? Because a lot of my clients don't want that model. They want, if I win a job with them, they want to know, am I going to be the person who's going to be doing the day-to-day, or are you going to put a trainee on it, or are you going to put a QS assistant on it? I just question that model, really. Does that model still work? Is it still relevant in the new norm? Because time after time, clients are saying, you've met them initially, and they want to work with you because they either like they like you, or they like what you're talking about, or they like your ideas, all sorts of things. So, do I want to set up that way? There's all sorts of different models that I've seen from different companies where certain employees buy into the business and they get shares in the business. Is that an option? Do we want to call ourselves QSs or PMs, or do we want to do away with QSs and PMs and just be called, people that work for Mode? I still find, the biggest challenge for corporates I found was the silos of working in silos. So you've got your QSs in a silo, you've got your PMs working in a silo, and you've got your building surveyors working in a silo.
Yeah.
And some of the corporates have got it better than others. But if you work together and cross-sell across those silos as such, you work a lot better together. So it's how you break. I don't want to create silos in a new business. I want everyone to be, you know, working together, helping each other, and, you know, create the right atmosphere and the right environment for a successful business.
Yeah, it almost seems a no-brainer, doesn't it? You do scratch your head why some businesses, they're almost competing against each other. It's bizarre in terms of different teams, which just makes no sense to me.
It is great.
Whatever the size of business is, it just makes no sense.
Yeah, exactly that. Competing against, you know, profit centers within profit centers, and they compete against themselves. It's just bizarre. It doesn't work for me. I don't want to create a business that does the same thing. I want to do something a little bit different, and that's what we're all about.
Good. No, well, good luck with it. I think it's exactly as you say at the moment, Gary. It's been able to find the right caliber of individual, the right cultural fit at the moment, in what now is suddenly a very kind of talent-driven, candidate-driven market again, I think. And it's then differentiating yourself from the other businesses.
I think a lot of people we've spoken to have said, what projects have you got on? Which is obviously a keen draw for recruiting. Also flexibility, because I think, you know, the pandemic has driven a lot of people working from home, but that's kind of made us so much more efficient. The amount of meetings I can get in over Teams or over... I could get like 10 meetings in a day, whereas previous to I'd drive to site, I'd have a meeting, drive back, and that's half the day gone. So you're doing one or two meetings a day. Whereas now I can do 10, I can interview someone over Zoom. And, you know, you can do so much more efficient. And people don't need to jump in their cars if they don't need to. I can even have a meeting with my client, or, you know, if they're on site, I'll have a walk around on their phone to see how they're getting on, you know, those sort of things. So technology and teams, and it's just had a massive impact on.
Oh, without a doubt, yeah.
Doing, and the efficiency of what we're doing as well. So, you know, I think people will still need an office to go to, especially when you've got graduates and other people that do need their hands held in, as it were.
Yes, yeah.
But it's, you know, going to the office on a Monday and a Friday, out and about, or working from home Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday sort of scenario, which is something I've always done anyway when I was in the corporate world.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a balance, isn't there? I think most people's natural cadence will be 2 to 3 days in the office and, yeah, slash 2 to 3 days at home. So, because I do, like you say, I personally think there's a lot of value in being in an office as well, in terms of you know, the collaboration, the learning, the kind of way people learn by osmosis of each other. So, I think there's certainly some things that offices very much give a lot of value for. Equally, hopefully, it has moved the debate on a decade in terms of giving people more flexibility as to how they work. You know, people who've got school runs they have to do. Like you say, meetings, the amount of time we must have all wasted going for meetings. Obviously I'm based in Leeds. My main client base is London. I'd often go down to London for maybe, you know, 2 or 3 meetings, which each last an hour. And it's taken out a long day, basically, by the time I travel down there and come back up from the day. And like you say, could have those 2 or 3 meetings now be done over a Zoom or Teams call? Absolutely. So there's definitely some efficiencies, without a doubt, to be had.
The other thing we're quite keen to do is we're setting up the Mode Academy.
Yeah.
So we're talking to universities and colleges of how they develop their semesters, their modules for their courses. What we found, again, when I was in corporate world is, you know, grade A students come out of universities. They've got fantastic A-level results. They've got fantastic degree results. Put them in a working sense, put them in an office and they've got a job to do. They struggle to communicate. They're not sure how they should, you know, that you've got to dress smartly. You've got to speak to people. Communicate is key. All these softer sort of skills that we don't get from some of the graduates that we've seen over the years. So we're talking to the likes of UE, Bristol College, about developing the whole learning process and the whole system to get some of the softer skills. And everyone's agreed with me so far. So, you know, they say, you know, to try and get a graduate to communicate, they just want to text or they want to email or they don't want to pick up the phone and sort it out over the phone. They just want to do it over email, which is always difficult at the best of times. You know, communication skills, the softer stuff, those sort of things. So that's something else that we're keen to develop.
And how will that work, Gary? Is that just for your people? Is that for the kind of wider industry? How are you going to work? Just explain that in more detail in terms of how that would work in terms of people accessing it.
So when I was at Loughborough, so I did a 4-year sandwich. So I had a year out in industry and then went back and did my finals.
Yeah.
And then went back to work for, which was my sponsor company. I thought that model works really well because it prepared you. So when I went back after my finals, my boss knew me inside and out. He went, hold over to you. There's the site. You know it. You know the people. You know the sub is. go. And that was me thrown in at the deep end right at the beginning of my career, more or less. So I kind of want to set up something similar where we look to sponsor students, get them to come and work for us for whether it be stints of 2 weeks or even a year, you know, that sort of process. And the apprenticeship scheme, you know, that's something we're looking at as well. Just to blur the lines between university and work so that it becomes a seamless process rather than a big jump from graduating to starting work. You know, it's quite daunting when you start. I remember the days of I turned up on site with 2 suitcases and that was it. That was me done after graduation. This is all down to you now. It is very daunting.
No, without a doubt.
Sitting in meetings with important clients, it's kind of like, you know, I want to get the best value out of those sort of people rather than people just turning up for meetings and not saying anything in meetings because they're too scared to. There's a lot to be had out of a good graduate or a good less senior member of the team. And I want those people to flourish as they come into the business and not be scared to ask silly questions because, you know, that's the only way we learn. You know, asking silly questions in front of a client is how they learn as well. So turn it all on its head, really. So,
100%.
So we work really closely with the universities and the colleges, and everyone's bit my hand off because they all say the same thing, trying to get graduates and students to communicate and work on their softer skills. And it's so important, I think.
So just so I'm clear, Guy, you'll have quite a number of people then go through Mode, essentially, even on short stints, just to give them some exposure to that in more detail.
Yeah.
Without you necessarily employing them at the end. Is that right?
No. We want to employ them. That's kind of like a football academy, isn't it?
You know, right, okay, you with you. Okay, excellent. Good.
Bring them in at that early stage and then train them up and then develop them, put them in the first team.
Perfect. All right, good. Brilliant. Okay. And will you have to expand? I guess you'll have to expand your management team to cope with that as well, then, will you, in terms of, depending on the number you're talking about?
Yeah. I mean, you just have to look at our website and we know the importance of people. Our industry is all about people. So if we can train them up at this end and then develop good managers. And I think training throughout is important as well, because that's one big thing I have learned is you'll see a really good graduate program. And then, you know, graduates come in, they've gone through the graduate program, they become senior members of staff, they become associates, then they become directors. And then that's it. There's no more training. You still need to develop those people even further.
100%.
Keep what's going on, you know, RICS, you know, keep them on so they're either assessors or whatever. So for me, as an RICS assessor, if I'm working closely with the trainees and the graduates that come through the process, it's a two-way process. I'm learning as well because things are constantly changing. So you ask them questions and if they ask you questions as well, it's great. It's a great way for keeping you on your toes. So I think the whole, you know, we're learning every day and the whole process needs to be managed all the way through, I think. As I say, if we take on senior managers, then we'll keep them trained up as well and push them on to, because everyone, that's why I question the whole model of consultancy. Once you hit director level, you know, where do you go from there? And do you become too top heavy? Because, you know, you've trained all your guys up to become directors and everyone's director of something or different. Can we turn that model on its head so everyone's becomes a Mode employee and then they've just got to, you know, look at skills matrix as to what experience they've had and where they can go and what they've done. So that, again, I want to create something that's a little bit different.
Yeah, it's a challenge, isn't it? Because I can think of organisations where they've got a very flat structure and some people kind of get frustrated with that as well because they feel they've got nowhere to go. So I think one of the key things for me is businesses get to a certain point size-wise and want to stop. That's very difficult because, like you say, you know, if you're good at what you do as a business in terms of developing people, you've got that kind of, for want of a better phrase, the kind of sausage factory producing them and churning them all out all the way to director. At some point, you're going to, unless you keep on growing, you can't continue to offer people opportunity to keep expanding. It's a challenging one, I think. Different models out there. It's interesting to see how companies keep people engaged.
I've seen it where, you know, as a consultant, you grow your consultancy arm, then, you know, there might be an opportunity to grow, say, like become development and grow development arm that then feeds the consultancy arm.
Yeah.
There's also opportunities that grows out of that. You know, you could work your way through the consultancy arm. I think I heard one of your podcasts yesterday talking about, can QSs convert to PMs? And I kind of thought, and you were saying, yeah, it's great that most QSs can convert to PMs. But I thought, well, surely if you're a QS, that means you can do both. So you still want to be a QS, but you can PM as well. You can be a PM. Absolutely. That's what I do. That's exactly what I do.
Yeah.
And it's another string to your bow. So, you know, it's that putting yourself in a box again. And I think a lot of companies do that. Are you a QS? Are you a PM? Are you a building surveyor? Well, what does it matter? you're a yes. construction professional and you're chartered in whatever you, you know, then that's the idea to become chartered, obviously, because there's a structured training program. Mm-hmm. But it's, you're a construction professional is how I see you, whether you're a building surveyor, a PM or a QS or whatever else you may be. And I've had this discussion with universities as well, because it's driven into us from day one. You're a QS, you're a PM or you're a building surveyor. And all the QSs stay together, all the PMs stay together.
Yeah, yeah.
The building surveyors stay together. So that you've already created a silo before they even start working for you. So
yeah, I suppose so, yeah, when you look at that, yeah, yeah. That's a hot potato, though, saying we're going to get lots of angry QSs and building surveyors after this guy telling us that you can't do both.
I know so many that can.
Yeah,
they do. I know building surveyors that have set up their own PM firm. So they're PM, they're building survey. I'm a chartered QS by background. I do a lot of project management. I do a lot of QS. I wouldn't know where to start building surveying, but yes. You know, it's. I think flexibility is so key these days. You know, the ability to change and adapt. I think, especially with the pandemic, the fact that you can change. And I know a lot of people in our industry don't like change, but I think it's key these days. You just need to be able to adapt and be so flexible. You know, if you're working abroad or you're working in the UK. Even in America, as you say, QSs are becoming more and more popular now, whereas
the
cost consultants in the past, the world is changing constantly. So you've got to adapt to it otherwise and be ahead of the curve in my eyes. And that's the only way we're going to move forward.
I genuinely believe, Gary, over the next, I would say 5 years, but definitely 10 years, I think more recently five, there's so much technological change coming now in the industry in terms of the tools available, what young surveyors, what young PMs, what young building surveyors will want to work with as well in terms of the tech. I do think some of the more traditional practices really will. And I know it's been a discussion that's been going on for 20 years about, you know, will technology, you know, take over the traditional skills? And I appreciate people are still clinging onto their scale rules going, not me, Jack, not today. I'm still fine, thanks. But I do believe over the next 5 years, they're going to get swamped by the change in technology and what clients are expecting. What's your thoughts on that?
I think there'll always be a need for the human intervention. Things like BIM, for example, you know, who takes the responsibility on the quants, for example, taking off the quantities. So there's always those sort of issues. It's just, I think it will change. I think, you know, you can't bury your head in the sand and just say, this is what I've always done. And that's what I'm always going to do. The people that will flourish will be the people that can change and adapt to it, because it is a changing world, as we know. Some of all the positive things that's come out of the pandemic, which has had an effect on the construction industry. But it shouldn't, in my eyes, it shouldn't have taken a pandemic to do that, but it has. But there's a lot of positives that have come out of it for how we work and how we interact. I think
yeah.
you know, people will always want to interact face-to-face, but I think more and more over Teams or Zoom.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny, isn't it, how this seems to have taken over the world as well. Obviously, I was speaking to somebody the other day who's been working remote for a long time, and he was, you know, saying, you know, it was all WebEx at the time or Skype, and now suddenly you hear of neither of those. It's all Teams or Zoom all the time. I've not heard anybody tell me, let's jump on a WebEx or let's jump on a Skype. It's all Teams and Zoom. So yeah, they really have taken over the market. I just get the impression probably Teams even more so than Zoom now. Because everyone's got its functionality. It's the same reason why Microsoft always wins, because everyone's got it on the PCs, you know, in most cases. So I think that's logically why, just that it's built in with Microsoft anyway, whereas Zoom is separate cost at the end of the day. You know, I've obviously got a, whatever you call it, a premium Zoom account, so I can go on for more than an hour if need be. But that costs me money each month, whereas Teams is free, isn't it, I guess, within the subscription of Microsoft. So, yeah. But no, but you're absolutely right. You know, times are changing. It was always pretty obvious that this could work in the consultancy environment, but it's really interesting to see, just from my interaction with people on LinkedIn, et cetera, how many people working for contractors are now working from home most of the time as well, which really would have been unheard of, you know, maybe even a year ago. So times are definitely changing. And you know, like you say, the companies that embrace that change, you know, most definitely will win, I think, over the next 5-10 years. But we've also got to be aware that we've taken on two young people ourselves via the Kickstart scheme, which I might talk to you about separately, actually, Gary, from your point you were saying earlier. But they're both young. They're both in their 20s. It amazes me how quick they are with the technology side of things, just like learning our systems and processes. They just get them immediately, you know, and you only have to explain it to them once and they've got it. And we are in this age now where obviously 18 to, you know, 24-year-olds are individuals who have grown up with iPads, with iPhones. They're used to working with apps, et cetera. So A, they want that. That's one thing for the industry to get their head around, that we need to embrace the fact that young people are tech savvy and that's what they want. It can also add a lot of value to a business, can, you know, help us oldies to to speed some bits up really and learn some things whilst equally learning a lot of the softer skills from us as well.
Yeah, so that is something that we're looking at. If I said to a client, I'm going to devise an app around you, so you can go into, say you're working for client A, got their own app, and we've got five projects with client A, So at any one time, they can go in and they can look at a cost report, they can look at a PM report, they can look at what's happening on site. You know, they don't actually physically have to go to site because, you know, most sites have got a camera on site where you can show how they're progressing day by day. You could have a dashboard report in there showing you KPIs, decisions to be made, costs that need signing off. It could all be done remotely via an app. And that is exactly what we're trying to get to. I mean, obviously, we're a small SME and we haven't got the budget this year to do that. But that's the goal. And we can do something similar, even without having an app in place and using, you know, the likes of Teams and, you know, all sorts of different technologies that are free to get to that situation. And that's something else that we do is, I said, we work with our clients rather than for them. So if you can sit down with your client and understand what the problems and their issues are, devise an app or through technology, and then get youngsters into that process, they can own the process, then it gives them a lot of responsibility. And that's one way of bringing them in and developing them.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's quite interesting, isn't it, how the skill set we will need in the industry will need to change, and we have to get our head around that. And you know, like you say, some, you know, young people coming into the industry may be able to bring some of that, the tech savviness element of it, at least. Like you say, giving them those kind of wider kind of people skills and softer skills that they also need to develop as well.
Yeah, my worry is, you know, as we grow this year, is where do we get the people from? Because we're looking now and it's, you know, do people want to actually, I don't know how you're finding it, but do people actually want to move to a smaller SME now?
Yes. Yeah, yeah. No, look, absolutely. I think, and interestingly, it's going both ways. It really is going both ways. You've got some individuals who are really drawn by the idea of going to an SME, you know, being able to literally sit in an office and be sat opposite the owner of the business. That's really appealing to some individuals. Equally, on the flip side, you've got some individuals who want to go to a larger firm for the, maybe with the view that, you know, the training, development, the scope of different projects they can get involved in is maybe larger. And maybe that's something that the SMEs have to embrace in that and work out, you know, what it is that's attracting individuals in their businesses to a larger business. But vice versa, that's what a lot of larger businesses also have to do, work out why is somebody wanting to go to a smaller business rather than stay with us. So in both ends of that spectrum, I have a job to do in terms of working out what do we need to do to make our environment more attractive to individuals to keep them with us or attract them to us. But no, absolutely, I'm placing people with, you know, businesses under 10 in headcount, Gary. So no, absolutely, people are moving.
That's one of the reasons why, and I see it quite a lot, some of the graduates, they want to work for a larger company because they've got that structured training program in place, become chartered, work on some of the bigger schemes you can put on your CV. Although I even question CVs these days. A lot of people saying CVs are dead, or use your CV to get into the door, but then it's what can you offer going forward? So why do I want to look at what you've done previously? You know, all these sort of questions throw them up in the air. So that's the model I've seen in the past where graduates are either sponsored and then go through the structured training program, get a chartership and then start to look. But, you know, if we can offer something like through the Mode Academy that I've discussed, that gives them something different, that's what we are. Be the blue fish, as we put on the social media, which is what we want to be.
Good.
And try and challenge some of these corporates so that we can show them what we can do from an SME point of view.
There are some exceptional SMEs out there, without a doubt, who really are challenging the corporates. And, you know, right from ones under 10 staff up to ones who are, you know, maybe 50 staff, you know, there are some great smaller businesses. And absolutely, I would implore and encourage you and everyone else to do that and challenge the bigger organizations, because that's where, you know, sometimes innovation comes from at the end of the day, by pushing it and doing things differently at the end of the day.
The other thing you've got to be careful of is growing too quick, too fast, because I've seen that a lot as well. And it's managing the delivery then, because if you're growing too quickly, I've seen other companies where they struggle to deliver because they're just growing too quickly.
No, you're absolutely right. No, that's obviously, you know, inevitable. That sometimes happens, doesn't it? Where they don't have a proper management structure in place as much as anything else, so they can't deliver the work, you know, appropriately. So, but it's a balance. You know, you've always got to make sure that you do a good job for a client, haven't you? If you start doing a bad job for a client, then you'll go backwards, not forwards. You know, equally, as I say, coming back to my other point, where some SMEs might struggle, they're the kind of SME, they're 20 people now, they've been 20 people nearabouts for the last 5 years. With that kind of scenario, what is the attractiveness to a young person, or in fact, anybody coming at any level within that business? What's the attractiveness? Because they've got very limited opportunity for further growth. If the business is not physically growing, then logically, they don't need to keep stepping people up through the ranks. And that for me is where a lot of SMEs struggle maybe to either retain or attract the right caliber of individual. Where, well, what are the growth plans? And that's fine. It's your business. If you're happy at 20 people, fantastic. You know, that's totally fine. It's your choice. It's your business. You've probably taken the majority of the risk to get to that stage where you're at 20 people. But right now, beyond that, what's the attractiveness to either staying or coming to you as a business? Where do these people go within the business? And if the answer is not anywhere really, then you're not maybe going to attract the right caliber of individual.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's what it's all about for us, because we're all fishing in the same pond at the end of the day.
Yeah.
So you've got to attract the right caliber. You've got to have the right triggers to get someone to come and join you. And then once they have joined you, retain them and keep them in the business for the next, as you say, 20, 30 years as you grow as a business and see them flourish.
Yeah. And that's got to be primarily for me around kind of culture and opportunity, Gary. If you give people those two things, then hopefully you'll be able to retain a lot more people.
That's the other thing, culture. Because if you get that wrong from day one, it's difficult to rewind. So it's about setting that, you know, I'm quite excited about this year because, you know, this year is so important to get the right people, develop the culture. It's all down to us at the end of the day. And then to maintain that culture as we grow. And it needs to be a refreshing culture. It's just slightly different to, as you say, some of the larger corporates or even other SMEs that we're working with or up against, should I say, rather. But I've found the SME culture is a lot more, you know, we work for other PMs, QSs, SME-wise, and they work for us. That's the only way we, you know, when we get busy, we use them, and when they get busy, they use us. So it's been a way of delivering quite successfully when you're only a small SME.
Yeah, no, I'm hearing that quite a lot as well across the, you know, across the piece. A lot of SMEs are engaging that kind of strategy as well, which is good, you know. Hopefully then everybody wins, everybody gets a little bit of the pie.
It's quite refreshing, but it does initially, it stops you from growing, but it's all about delivery and it's all about people for us at the end of the day. So if we get the right people and we keep on delivering for our clients and then grow our client base, which we are doing, you know, we've got some real blue chip companies starting to talk to us now.
Good.
Done some work for Bristol Port. Krispy Kreme donuts are the next one that are talking to us on their rollout program.
Do you get free donuts off the back of that, Gary?
We did on Friday. We had an
excellent
actual site visit and
great client. And,
depends how you look at it.
Yeah, could be bad for the waistline. excellent. I normally do, Gary, unless you've got any other questions. I usually kind of fire a few kind of more rapid fire questions at you, unless you've got anything else you want to kind of discuss in the main bulk of the discussion.
I was just going to talk about, you know, how the again, the pandemic's hit everyone in the industry and you know, we're all social animals, as it were, unable to network face to face. So we've all gone online. And just to show the importance of social media and how that's going to continue as well. You're obviously going to get back to your face-to-face meetings over a coffee or lunch or beer, even better.
Ideal.
But I think there will still be a mixture, you know. I mean, I think social media has been so important for us over this past year. What you've got on LinkedIn, what you've got on Twitter, Instagram, everything has just been so powerful. And you can see how everyone has gone online. Everyone's looking at it. To the fact where people have said, oh, I've seen this link on social media, come and have a chat with us, and you know, we've got X amount of projects. It's so powerful, social media, because of that.
Without a doubt.
And we've just seen, again, another positive of the, if you can see it, of the pandemic is the importance of social media. And I think that will continue when we go back to the new norm. And, you know, putting things like you do on podcasts out on social media, I think, you know, it's all these new and videos are becoming so important. So that's the next thing we're looking at, is making a video and the importance of the message that you put out there and what you get back and the feedback that you get back and listening to that feedback that you get back as well is important. But digital marketing is going to be the way forward as well, I think.
Without a doubt. I think someone said it to me the other day and it really rings true. If you think, how long would it take you to ring 1,000 people? Yet 1,000 people, you know, instantaneously can see a post that you put on LinkedIn and engage with it. Even if they don't like or comment, they've still seen it. And the register, it's you. How long would it take you to speak to 1,000 people? Bloody forever. Whereas you can get a hit of that immediately. And yeah, look, I, as you'll know, I'm a big advocate of it. Obviously, I'm particularly LinkedIn. I'm on it all the time. And it separates me from a lot of my competition because I genuinely think I put out a lot of, hopefully, you know, good, useful content that people, it resonates with people and helps people engage with me more, trust in me more. And, you know, when somebody's looking for a job or looking to employ somebody, they'll often come to me if they've not got an established relationship because it's like, well, I know I can trust this guy compared to a lot of the other recruiters out there. So yeah, it definitely works. And I agree with you, Gary, that, you know, more consultancies, more contractors should engage in the process on LinkedIn and other things because it does work. It absolutely works. You just got to be willing to put the effort in. That's the only thing. And show up every day, respond to people's comments, all that kind of good stuff. But as long as you do, it does work. Absolutely.
And again, I think when, you know, well, we're coming out of lockdown now, but, and there will be a mixture of that social interaction and social media. But if you can get the balance right again on that. So, you know, again, it's still going to be important what you put out there. You can mix it up with videos and podcasts and posts, and also do your face-to-face meetings as well, because there is some importance in the face-to-face as well.
Oh, 100%. There's a lot of value in that. Good. Okay. So, Gary, normally I say ask you a few kind of rapid fire questions. So the first one is, as this is called Meet the Boss, who has been your best boss in your career and why?
You want me to actually name names?
Yeah. Obviously, it's a positive thing. Obviously, it's not a negative thing. I mean, you don't have to, but yeah, a lot of people do. Yeah. If there's anybody you think, you know, was really pivotal in your career.
My first ever boss. So, as I said, I was a sponsored student, Wimpy, became Tarmac Construction when I graduated due to the asset swap. But my first boss was Adrian Johnson. As I say, he just embraced me as a graduate, threw me right in at the deep end. And I love that. That's the way I learned. I was on site when we were managing, you know, it was a £20 million scheme. Gave you so many subcontractors to manage on site. He got me chartered as well, got me through the chartership. He actually left and then went to work for a client and took me with him. So, right. So we became a team almost. And he did so much for me. Yeah, became chartered because of aid. And that he was one of my first bosses. And yeah, he had a massive impact on my career. Still speak to him today.
Well, that's a good sign, isn't it? At the end of the day, from both sides. At the end of the day, that's good. What's the best piece of career advice you've ever heard or been given?
Best bit of career advice? I think, you know, coming into the industry now, it's a changing industry. Mm. It is all about flexibility and agility and what you adding value. You just need to be a sponge from day one. Whatever you do, you know, whether you're a cricketer, a footballer, come into construction, you just got to be. I mean, again, when I first started working for contractor, I used to listen to what people say or what my boss said, and then I'd walk into another room and just relay the same information. People used to think, "Wow, this guy knows what he's talking about." But all I was doing was it's about being clever and being a sponge and using it as to the best of your ability, really.
Yeah. That's one of the big things, isn't it? I think with us all working from, I do think that's one area where a lot of young, you know, people starting their career really struggle, because you do learn a lot of that by osmosis. You do learn a lot just by just absorbing, like you say, what your boss says, what your senior says, and just working out how to do things from that. So that's why one of the reasons why I think people do need to be back in offices, so that we can start that learning process again, I think. Yeah. And what's the worst piece of career advice you've ever heard or been given?
Not change. You know, that's right. A frustrating thing is, I don't know why as an industry we're quite scared of change. I mean, we need to be able to adapt and be flexible. Why not? That, you know, just because that's the way we've always done things doesn't mean say it's the right or wrong way. That, you know, it's come, oh, we can't change. Well, why not? I hear people that say, oh, we've always done it this way. This is the way we're going to always do it. As you say, technologies are changing, attitudes are changing, people are changing, everything's changing. So you've got to be, what's the old analogy? Change or die, is it?
Yeah, definitely. I think that's it. Yeah, you know, we have to always constantly be evolving. Anybody who ever says, you know, this is the way we do things, that's the way it's always been done, is just in such danger at the moment. You know, we've seen, haven't we, so many businesses in different industries kind of go out of business because they've stuck to that model of not being able to change. You know, does the construction industry want to become a blockbuster or, you know, something like that, who just is not prepared to accept there's going to be change ahead of them? In my view, I think we've got to all keep on adapting.
I think even the contractor world, you know, you look at main contractors these days, a main contractor will all 90% of the time they're managing subcontractors. That's what they do nowadays. So you're paying for the fact that you've got a guy on site managing the supply chain at the end of the day. But that model might change as we move forward again. You know, it's and clients' models change all the time. They resource internally, then they go out to external consultants. And, you know, it is a cyclical industry that we work in, but it's thinking about doing things in a new way and in a new manner, I think, and that's what we're trying to do here.
Good. Awesome. Last question, Guy. What's the best business book you ever read? It could be, if not a business book, it could be something else, a podcast, or, you know, something, a video. What would you say is the best thing you've ever read or recently, I guess, that has kind of informed your way of doing things, I guess, your way of working?
Because I'm in football, and we're doing the same thing for our local football team. So we're training the under-18s to come into adult football, and, you know, and that is the same model that we're doing in construction. There's a lot of people in football that's in construction.
Yes, yeah.
And the amount of work I get through football or rugby or even going down the gym these days. But I've read Alex Ferguson's book on management, and it's all about people management and, you know, good management. I've seen time and time again, it's all about people management. Alex Ferguson was so good at it. You know, I watched Jackie Charlton's programme last night. I don't know if you saw that on BBC
Two. I didn't actually know, no.
And he's kind of like an underling of Bobby Charlton. Well, he's his older brother, but, you know, he's always, when he came out of football, he went and he was a Republic of Ireland manager. And, you know, the stresses and strains he went through. But he used to make notes about everything, which, again, something I do, but I'm not, you know, Jack Charlton. But, you know, it's so I am reading Alex Ferguson's book at the moment, and it's really interesting. And every time I see it time and time again, a good manager, a good leader, it's all about people management and how you manage people.
Yeah, definitely. No, I need to read that one. And the other one people keep on cropping up, I don't know if you've read it, Gary, but everyone keeps on saying you should read it, is I'm probably going to get the title wrong. I think it might be called The Barcelona Way, but apparently the whole ethos behind Barcelona, again, is apparently a book that's really worth reading, I'm told by a lot of people.
Rich Dad, Poor Dad as well. That's another good one that I've
classic, read. Yeah, absolutely classic. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's a good book. That certainly makes you think differently, doesn't it, about how you go about amassing wealth.
I think it is people. It is people what we do, whether you're trying to get a job done, whether you're trying to grow a business, whatever you do, it's all about how you motivate people and how you get the right people and develop them in the right way.
100%. The amazing amount of businesses just don't get that simple logic. It really is about people at the end of the day. Certainly in the consultancy business, it's all bloody about people at the end of the day. It amazes me how some businesses really screw up that simple concept up, but they do, but which is not a bad thing. That gives you and other decent organizations an opportunity to get better people. So I guess to some extent, long may it continue. Some businesses
get so wrong. If you could imagine it, you know, the old model of a consultant working in an office, pick up the phone, can we get through the cost plan, blah, blah, blah. But if we could do this like over Teams, and then, as you say, just click on the app and you said, right, let's click on the camera, let's see how progress is getting on site today. Oh, right, okay, yeah, there's how many people are on site? Oh, there's 10 people on site, great. And then you can see them all on site. Right, let's go through the contract. Let's go through the contract. So do it all like this. Doesn't matter where you are. I mean, I could have clients in Venezuela. I could have and your overhead is minimum as well, because you're not jumping in a cut. You know, it's better for the environment, better for my overhead. It'd be a great way of working if we could just all. For me, it's all about being ahead of the curve and trying to do something new, and then eventually people see it and go, right, that's how you're doing it. and then eventually everyone will it'll become the norm. How quickly has Teams become the norm? You know, it's just because we have.
No, you're absolutely right. No, I do think, as I say, I do think we're going to see a lot of change over the next 5 years, for the better in many cases as well, which is good. Gary, that's perfect. That is me totally out of questions now. Thank you for your time today. I think we've probably covered everything. Is there anything you want to add before we kind of draw it to a close?
No, I don't think so. I was a bit of a brain dump. I'll go back to bed now, I think.
Excellent. All right, Gary, thanks for your time today. Thanks for being involved.
All right, cheers, Paul.
Okay, thanks. Cheers.
Bye.
Cheers. Bye-bye.